Hello, and welcome to Weekend Programming here on Radio Prague. I'm Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, we have a new edition of Czech History ready for you, which will look at the life of the last crowned king of Bohemia, Ferdinand V. And in another edition of Czech Life, Sara Burovka will be talking to British war bride who came over to Czechoslovakia in 1945, Lilian Šolžová. And finally, we'll round out the program with another edition of From the Archives. Let's get started straight away, though, with Czech history and Jan Richter.
The coronation of Emperor Ferdinand as the King of Bohemia in September 1836 was a remarkable event in Prague. Thousands of people lined the route of the royal procession to St. Vitus Cathedral, where the Emperor was crowned as Ferdinand V, followed by a feast in the castle halls. On that day, the 7th of September, Ferdinand became the last crowned king of Bohemia. His successors on the throne, his nephew Franz Joseph I and briefly Charles I, never accepted the Bohemian crown. Many depictions of this historical day can be seen at a new exhibition at Prague Castle, dedicated to Ferdinand and his era. Jaroslav Sojka from Prague Castle is the curator of the exhibition.
In Queen Anne Summer Palace, visitors can see, for example, an enclosed carriage Ferdinand used for traveling around Prague and in his summer retreats, which we have on loan from the Postal Museum. There are also portraits of him and his wife from Prague Castle's collections, as well as various lithographies and graphic sheets depicting his coronation. We also have a set of beautiful porcelain busts from the 1820s and 1830s, originally from the Zákupy Chateau.
Ferdinand V was also the last imperial inhabitant of Prague Castle, although he came to live here only after he stepped down in the wake of the 1848 revolutions. His ailing health, as well as apparently limited faculties and abilities, made him a weaker ruler, and state affairs of the large Austrian Empire were run by his ministers, mainly by Chancellor Metternich.
People in Vienna, Prague, and other parts of the monarchy were disappointed with the rule of his influential Chancellor Clemens Wenzel von Metternich. This dissatisfaction eventually turned against the emperor, although no one officially requested him to step down. Ferdinand simply left Vienna for Innsbruck and later for Olomouc and declared himself a constitutional monarch. But I think that if his family, mainly Archduchess Sophie, had not forced him to resign, he would not have done so of his own accord.
Many myths appeared about the nature of Ferdinand's condition. He was considered feeble-minded and suffered from epilepsy. Due to the practice of intermarriage, so notorious in the Habsburg house, he only had four great-grandparents, and he and his wife, Maria Anna of Savoy, had no children.
We can certainly say he suffered from epilepsy and that his condition was wrongly treated. His disease manifested itself by frequent fits of exhaustion. But when you realize that he went through many long ceremonies and that he spoke German, Czech, Hungarian, Latin, and even Italian, he certainly did not embarrass himself or the empire he ruled at the time.
The emperor first fled the popular unrest in Vienna in May of that year and spent the next few months at his court in Innsbruck. In August, he left the capital again, this time for the Moravian city of Olomouc, where he finally handed the rule over the empire to his nephew, Franz Joseph. As Ferdinand recorded in his diary, "Then I embraced him and kissed our new master, and then we went to our room. Afterward, I and my dear wife heard Holy Mass. After that, I and my dear wife packed our bags." People first thought he was on his way to Innsbruck, but his train stopped in Prague. Curator Jaroslav Sojka explains why the former emperor chose to spend the rest of his days here.
I have given this a lot of thought, and I have to say that Prague was a big city at that time, with the monumental Prague Castle, so I think it was an ideal seat for a monarch. Innsbruck was much smaller, while Košice and Bratislava were too close to Vienna. If he was meant to retreat from public life, Prague was the ideal place. Another reason was that he had two estates in Bohemia, in Zakupy and Ploskovice, which he inherited from Napoleon's son, Napoleon II.
Orlíkovi, a to je to vévodství zákupské.
Once the burden of official state business was off Ferdinand's shoulders, he and his wife lived quietly in Prague and spent their summers at their chateaus in Zákupy and Ploskovice.
Věnoval se zájmům z mládí, protože on byl vyučený zahradník.
He devoted a lot of time to his own interests. As a boy, he was trained as a gardener, so he studied pomology, which you can clearly see when you visit his estates in Zákupy and Ploskovice and walk through the alleys of old pear and apple trees. He also supported arts, and he collected paintings. He was interested in technology. He collected musical clocks and various mechanical toys, and he also spent a lot of time reading, just like his wife. Both of them were also fond of music.
A také se věnovali oba dva společnému zájmu, a tím byla hudba.
The exhibition also shows what Ferdinand's living quarters looked like, complete with Rococo furniture, paintings and objects of everyday use. One of these model rooms represents an office of the castle clerks, and another the blue salon used by Ferdinand's wife. The second part of the exhibit is held at the Imperial Stables at Prague Castle and features Ferdinand's art collection. Although the last crowned king of Bohemia did not have a very refined taste, Jaroslav Sojka says it offers a nice look at popular art of the time.
In the imperial stables, you can see paintings owned by the emperor, by Wilhelm Kandler, who was very close to Ferdinand, and by Josef Navrátil, another painter whose work is characteristic of the era, as well as statues by Emmanuel Max. And, for instance, a golden rose, a gift by Pope Gregory XVI to Maria Anna in 1831, who was yet to become the Queen of Bohemia, but was already the Queen of Hungary, and, of course, Ferdinand's wife.
One of the legends about Ferdinand says that in the vast halls of Prague Castle, Ferdinand played with toy trains. But Jaroslav Sojka says this is very exaggerated, although the former emperor did have an interest in trains.
Unlike his father, Ferdinand was interested in technology and supported the railways. Austria's first railway company was named after him. He liked traveling by train, and when he fled Vienna in 1848 and on other occasions, he traveled by steamboat on the Danube. His era is linked to the beginning of the railways in the Czech lands. There are also many myths about him. One says that as an adult he liked to play with toy trains. But that's a bit like saying that his successor, Franz Joseph, liked to play with weapons since very early childhood.
As its last imperial inhabitants, Ferdinand and his wife did leave their trace at Prague Castle. The ceremonial rooms used by the Czech president have not changed significantly since Ferdinand's time.
Ferdinand V. Dobrotivý používal na Pražském hradě prostory, které...
Ferdinand V. used parts of Prague Castle created during an adaptation in the 18th century. Today, these areas are used for various ceremonies and people can visit them at least twice a year. They were built in the Baroque style but were later fitted with Rococo and Neo-Baroque furnishings between the 1860s and 1880s. Another part of Prague Castle, which bears significant traces of Ferdinand's taste and that of his wife, is the Chapel of the Holy Cross in the second courtyard, which they had remodeled and fitted.
Unlike in other parts of the former Austrian monarchy, Ferdinand V was quite popular in Bohemia, even after he resigned. The exhibition includes a closed carriage the family outcast used on his trips around Prague, greeted by people from all walks of life. Another legend has it that Ferdinand would often stroll along the boulevard known today as Národní třída, handing out candy to children and pittance to beggars. But the curator of the exhibit, Jaroslav Sojka, says Ferdinand's popularity with the Czechs also had a political undertone.
Rozhodně domnívám, že v Čechách je oblíbený, ale v Rakousku a v Německu.
I would definitely say he was popular in Bohemia much more than he was in Austria and Germany, where he remains in the shadow of more significant rulers, such as, for example, Maria Theresa and his successor and nephew, Franz Joseph I. In Prague, he earned the nickname Benign, because he was the last crowned king of Bohemia, and also because he was known as a pious person whom the Czechs liked to greet ostentatiously in the street to show their dislike of the government in Vienna.
Trošku zasadili takový drobný trn právě současné vídeňské vládě.
The exhibition about Ferdinand V and his era at Prague Castle runs until early September.
That edition of Czech History was looking there at the life of Ferdinand V, the last crowned king of Bohemia. If you'd like to comment on that program or that part of today's program, please do so by writing to us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz. Also, don't forget you'll find many more news, items, and stories at our website, radio.cz. Let's move on now, though, to our second feature for today's show, and that is Czech Life with Sarah Borůvka.
Lillian Chojová has been living in the small suburb of Lom near the mining town of Most in northern Bohemia for nearly 70 years. The 92-year-old Englishwoman, who was born in Stratford-upon-Avon, came to Czechoslovakia in 1945 with her husband, Josef. The two had met in England, where he was fighting with the Allies. During World War II, some 12,000 Czechoslovak citizens were stationed in Great Britain, and the Czechoslovak government in exile installed itself in London in 1940. Josef and Lillian met in her hometown at a dance, but Lillian first danced with Josef's friend Jan, who went by John.
We went to the dance hall. I danced with two or three of the boys I knew because I went to school in Stratford. And then this Czech came across the room and said, please, will you dance with me? And so we danced, and then, of course, he took me back to my chair. And he said, will you dance? My friend would like to dance with you. And I said, well, if he comes for me, then I will. Of course, it was Joseph, my husband-to-be. He came across. He didn't know a word except please. And so we danced together.
After Lillian had danced with Josef, his friend Jan asked on Josef's behalf whether she would like to go on a date with him. This is how Lillian remembers the story.
And so when we went outside, John and this Joseph stood there, and John came and he said, would I go with his friend when he had a bit of free time to the cinema or to the theatre? And I said, does he speak English like you? No. He only knows please. I said, yes, I noticed that. And John said, if he lends to 6 months, will you go with him? Because I said, what will we do if he doesn't speak English? I don't know. And I looked Czechoslovakia. I don't know how to speak Czechoslovakia. And he said, he'll learn it to 6 months. If he learns it to 6 months, will you go? Will you promise him to go with him to the cinema or the theatre? And I said, if he learns to speak English to 6 months, I'll go to the end of the world with him. Just making fun. We were laughing, we 3 years, all the time. And of course, that happened, didn't it? I didn't go to the end of the world, but I came here.
Josef did actually learn English, but even before he spoke the language, he would often wait for Lillian outside her place of work.
He found out where I worked from Mary, and when Josef had free time, because he was not stationed in Stratford, he was stationed at Morton Paddocks. He came, but he didn't speak to me. He stood over the other side of the road when I finished work, 3:30 in the afternoon. And he stood and, as I say, just went with me to the station, railway station, because we'd moved out to a village.
In the end, Josef won Lillian over. He learned English and was finally able to take her out on a proper date. When Christmas 1939 came around, she arranged it so that Josef and she could spend the holiday together.
At Christmas time, my mother said, at the town offices, they asked all the British people if they'd entertained for Christmas or New Year a foreign soldier. So my mother said to me, yes, do you know, we'll take 2 Americans. And I said, but Mom, some Americans are very rich and we're not rich. We're just ordinary people. Look, I know 2 very, very nice Czechs.
Lillian's tiny apartment is decorated with hand-painted pictures, countless photographs and keepsakes, including an album of pictures from the period when she met her husband. Among them is a photo taken on the day that she and Josef got engaged. 72 years later, her face still lights up when she sees it.
And that was the day Josef asked me to be his wife.
You look so happy in this picture.
My brother took the photo. Of course, these are Czech officers that were in Josef's route. And that's Josef, of course. He's there somewhere too.
He's rather handsome.
Yeah, he was. But as I say, why did he have to suffer such a lot?
Josef and Lillian's wedding ceremony was a modest wartime affair. Lillian has held on to the corsage she wore on that day. In fact, it is displayed in her living room.
That's my wedding photo.
Oh, you guys look lovely. That is a very nice picture.
And you see this?
The flower? You still kept it?
Still got it. Some of the leaves have dropped off and one bell has dropped off, but otherwise that's there.
And may I ask you, where did you get married and when?
In England, in Stratford-upon-Avon. We met in 1940. In 1941, we had our wedding. And in 1942, Anna, my daughter, was born. She's just been 70.
Wow, that is...
I've just been 92.
Lillian has lived a very adventurous and interesting life, most of it spent in Czechoslovakia and later the Czech Republic. Originally, however, she had not planned to stay here this long.
And then we came here, of course, on the 17th of September... 1945. Yes, I only came for 3 months. Yeah, it's a good 3 months. It's a long 3 months. Then in January, towards the end of January, Josef collapsed in the kitchen. Took him into hospital and they took 2/3 of his stomach away. A man who'd always been so active and strong. Well, he wasn't fat or anything, but he was always active. And so that happened. He was in hospital for 11 weeks after the operation. And, of course, I had to get permission to stay longer.
Those first years in her husband's native country were very difficult for Lillian, not just due to her husband's worsening state of health. Now, it was her turn to learn a new language. At first, she did not have many friends or people she could talk to. And as everywhere in Europe, the ravaging effects of the Second World War were still palpable here in Czechoslovakia. What was life like in those first years after the war?
Well, what was it like? No cars, no dogs, no cats. I didn't know anybody except my mother-in-law, but she wasn't very pleased. Her son had married an English woman. So the first 2 years were very, very bad for me. Very bad.
Since then, Lillian has mastered the language quite well, and she even peppers her English sentences with the Czech word no, which amounts to something like well. But her accent is still noticeable, and she says many people point it out to her.
You speak Czech with an accent sort of thing. And I said, oh yes, I speak Czech with a Warwickshire accent. That's the county where I'm from in England. No.
The story of how exactly Lillian learned Czech is fascinating, as are the years she spent living behind the Iron Curtain. In next month's episode, we will hear more from her about the early years in Czechoslovakia, her position on communism, and how she has managed to stay so remarkably fit, even at 92.
That edition of Czech Life brings us to our final feature for this day, which is another episode of our long-running series, now in reruns, from the archives, hosted as always by David Vaughan.
Part of the American response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979 was a threat to boycott the 1980 Moscow Summer Olympics. The Soviet troops stayed put, and the boycott went ahead, led by US President Jimmy Carter. To a greater or lesser extent, dozens of countries joined the protest.
Spectrum. Minuty se zahraničními zpravodaji.
A few weeks before the games began, Czechoslovak radio broadcast an edition of its regular feature Spektrum, condemning the boycott.
Je to prostě krátkozraká politika a škodí nejen olympijským hrám.
This is short-term politics. Not only does it damage the Olympic Games, but the whole Olympic movement. The main victims of this campaign by the American president are the athletes themselves.
Olympijská amerického prezidenta jsou pak především sami sportovci.
And Czechoslovak radio's correspondent in New York, Michal Staš, sent a dispatch quoting several American athletes who opposed the boycott, as well as one of the senior American Olympic officials, former decathlete Bob Mathias.
Our position is we should have the games in Moscow, let's beat the heck out of them, and let the politicians do something else politically.
At this point, the English fades under the translation, although the correspondent is careful to leave out the bit about beating the heck out of them. On July the 19th, 1980, a spectacular opening ceremony took place in Moscow, with Czechoslovak radio reporting live as the Olympic torch was lit. Czechoslovakia sent over 200 athletes, who came home with 14 medals, including two golds. The final of the football at the Lenin Stadium was between Czechoslovakia and the 1976 champions, East Germany.
Goal! Goal! 1-0!
And that was the moment in the 78th minute when Jindřich Svoboda scored the winning goal that earned him the nickname the Golden Foot. Kicked in right after he'd nearly headed the ball past the East German keeper. He later joked that he could have become the Golden Head. Politics continued to beset the Summer Olympics, and 4 years later, in 1984, it was tit for tat as the communist countries boycotted the Games in Los Angeles. At that time, the shot putter, Helena Fibingerová, who had won bronze in 1976, told Czechoslovak radio that she was heartbroken to be staying at home. But she also added,
ale stavím se za stanovisko našeho olympijského výboru, protože v určitých kruzích...
I share the view of our Olympic committee, because in certain circles an abnormal situation has emerged, which threatens the purity of the Olympic spirit, and we all need to understand this.
...olympijské myšlenky a to musíme prostě všichni pochopit.
8 years later, following the end of the Cold War, the Olympics in Barcelona in 1992 were the first in 2 decades to be boycott-free. They are also the last to include Czechoslovakia as a single country.
From the archives with David Vaughan, and that brings us just about to the end of today's show. Just a quick reminder, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard, write to us at english@radio.cz, or if you prefer, take part in discussions on Facebook or Twitter. I'm Jan Vellinger. For all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of the weekend.